Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And that debt is fraud, and it's now or never, and it's all about compliance with the Constitution. We're going through a a comprehensive layout of how this nation evolved out of the British Empire and what fell out, what was injected, and what was retained, because those things are important. When we look at people today giving us our history of what our government is and what it's, you know, what they claim it is, unfortunately, too much of it is myth. Unfortunately, too much of it are things that actually don't exist in our constitutional republic. There's so many misnomers that it's just hard to keep track. But some of the big ones that I'll quickly share is this concept that our English common law that was implemented in America under our Constitution was the same as English common law, which is why we use Blackstone's commentaries, because Blackstone's commentaries was based on English common law, where the supreme law of the land was the Bible. The Constitution makes the Constitution, and the states ratifying the Constitution makes the U.S. Constitution the supreme law of the land. So right there in our common law system that we've established in each of the states, except for Louisiana, no negative being or hate being sent out to Louisiana on that. But that being said, as we look at how the states were moving forward, they needed to shift away from their theocracies, because as we look at the time of the Constitutional Convention, I say this a lot, and I'm going to give you exactly the snapshot of how the states were configured in 1787, 1789. They didn't change between those times, from the convention to the forming of the federal government. It took time after the forming of the federal government for the people of the states to say, you know what, we need to adapt, and we need to improve our government, because we don't like this general powers. We don't like this lack of delegating power. So all of the states ultimately ended up adopting the U.S. Constitution and enumerated constitutions at that, where the people limited their government. But prior to that, the governments, many of the governments, eight of the governments, were a quasi-theocracy with general powers. And all of them actually had general powers, and almost all of them were basically configured into a magistrate kind of government, where they didn't have necessarily separations of powers. The state legislatures were the almighty poobahs of the state. They may have an executive, but the executive's hands were tied. And in some cases, they didn't have an executive. And in other cases of, you know, state framework, they didn't have a judiciary. But all states had a legislative body. So that's why, kind of looking at the snapshot, when the Constitution was being written, they were breaking the mold in such a way that people, very few people appreciate this. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to stop talking until everybody appreciates this. At least that's my attempt of trying to be a Karen. So anyway, welcome back, Tammy. Welcome back, Sean. Thank you both for joining. So anyway, as they were migrating into the Constitutional Convention, we're giving you the hardcore evidence of how inept and impotent the Articles of Confederation were. So we're going to cover the proceedings of the Annapolis Convention, which was, it ended, I think it met September 11th. Is that not irony? It met on September 11th, and I think it ended, we'll get into the dates, doesn't matter, 1786. And the Shays' Rebellion was pretty much, you know, rising up. In other words, as they were convening into this already scheduled convention, the Shays' Rebellion was just rising up, or it was in that process. This convention was literally called for by the preceding convention, which was the, I think it's called the Maryland, or no, the Mount Vernon Convention, or the Maryland Compact, I believe. I think that's what it was. Let me make sure I got the right title for this. No, the Mount Vernon Convention. Mount Vernon Convention. So anyway, in 1785 in Virginia, they kind of had this convention of things they needed to do as states to kind of improve their lot. And so at that point in time, they recognized that, you know what? We need the Confederation or this general government to actually get the powers it needs, because that became the, you know, the elephant in the room that they kept on trying to amend the Constitution. It wasn't going anywhere. So in this Mount Vernon Convention of 1785, they said, we need to convene a convention. We need to get all the states there. And instead of doing it in the spring, because that's when the Mount Vernon Convention started, they said, let's wait till right before harvest, which is why they chose September. Because by that point in time, you've nurtured and nurtured and nurtured your fields, and you're basically about ready to harvest. So it's a great time. This is when, you know, they had They had, you know, spring break, or actually it was fall break. I'm just kidding. You know, this is where the farmers had, you know, pretty much put their labor in. Now the real labor in harvesting was just around the corner, so they were getting kind of ready and resting. And so the perfect time to get a higher involvement out of the other states. And they basically said, we need all states to get to this convention so that we can discuss what we're going to do in fixing the Confederation and getting them to what they need to serve us. So that's what ends up happening. And as we were going through the proceedings, I read to you, I think it was the six states, so I'll just read again because we just covered this, that the six states was New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Virginia. Oops, I said six, that's five, right? And Delaware. Let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, and five. So there were only five states that were present out of 13, not even half. And they were very disappointed. And the people that attended, some of the names you'll find are actually, you know, the who's who now. You know, there was Edmund Randolph, who was the governor, and James Madison, this new up-and-coming rising star on government and knowing government. There was this Sherman of New York and or New Jersey, Alexander Hamilton of New York, and so forth. And so there were two real driving forces, and I would point to Hamilton and Madison were the real driving forces in this convention, in this Maryland, the Annapolis Convention of 1786, that asserted that they needed to have a strenuous, a strenuous argument, or basically get Continental Congress to really put pressure on the states to attend the convention coming up in May. Because they made it in May due to the fact that they knew that they could not come up with the amendments or fixing the Articles of Confederation in a week or two. This was going to take time, and so the people, the delegates that were going to go to this convention to fix the articles, because the Congress couldn't do it. Remember, Congress did not have the power to create or make recommendations to the amendments. That was left to the states. The difference in the new Constitution is Congress can make recommendations. And basically, that's how they've been doing it. The states would tell them what they wanted, they'd just do it, instead of convening a convention. Articles of Confederation, they didn't have that power. And so the reason why the states had to subsidize, they had to do everything themselves, because it wasn't delegated. And I'm saying this because right now there's a huge line of people going into your state house demanding that they convene a convention for an Article 5 convention for rewriting the Constitution. And there's a whole line of people that are saying, hey, you know, we don't need a convention. In other words, they're occupying and wasting our, you know, our time is finite. We don't have a lot of time, and wasting the conversation on things that are not going to fix the problem is literally that. It is a waste of time. So, anyway, so what do you guys think of my being a Karen?
You didn't ask for the manager. You failed.
I know. I was just going to stop talking. Anyway.
Karens never stop talking.
That's, well, I know, but see, I was going to punish everybody. I'm just, there you go. All right, so what we have now is the conversations of what they were trying to do. They realized that they didn't have the proper people, but there were conversations. So what I kind of want to go through is who, you know, not only was present, and I was right, it was Egbert, because they actually spelled the names at the very front end of this. And I don't think Roger Sherman, no, he wasn't at this, but he was at the Continental Congress for the Declaration of Independence. He was at the table for the Articles of Association. He was at the table for the Articles of Confederation. And he was at the table for the Constitution. The only framer that was at all four critical documents. Just a little bit of, you know, tidbit. Anyway, so what we kind of want to read is this overview and the details from 1 month, you know, from one day of the month to the next and the next and the next. So we kind of want to cover the proceedings because this is going to set the stage of why they couldn't do what they needed to do, and they needed to get Continental Congress to demand that everybody support this. So I'll start this off with the very top part leading into the first, that's actually the second or third day, which was Wednesday. The commissioners produced their credentials. Every time a convention, you know, it occurs, they all bring credentials. In other words, it is a note from the state legislature that this person has the authority to represent them. So the commissioners produced their credentials from their respective states, which were read. After a full communication, and I'll tell you what, these are very lofty credentials. Oh, the wise, blah, 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 blah. I mean, they make their person, you know, they try to elevate their person to intimidate everybody else to say, this is the wisest guy in your room, so you better watch out. Anyway, after a full communication of sentiments and deliberate considerations of what would be proper to be done by the commissioners now assembled, it was unanimously agreed that a committee be appointed to prepare a draft of a report to be made to the states, having commissioners attending this meeting adjourned till Wednesday morning. And so this is when they kind of start talking. And these are very short little summaries of what they, I'm telling you, three lines does not really tell you everything they did that day, right? So there's, and I don't think that there's any notes like by Madison that gives you the details of, you know, what they discussed, how it evolved, anything like that, like the Constitution Convention. So let's kind of go through this so that we can see how this played and how they were responding to a lack of interest, but understanding the exigencies, the urgency that the Union was facing. It's literally its demise was around the corner. Again, as I said yesterday, the Shays Rebellion was just really, you know, becoming news. And I know news traveled slowly back in those days, but, you know, people were starting to realize that there were some states that were hanging by a thread because the people could not afford to pay the tax burdens that was being placed upon the states. What do we do? Okay, so, Tammy, let's start you off with Wednesday, September 13th, and then we'll take kind of a round robin like that. Actually, when we get into the 14th, we'll kind of split that up by, you know, length of segments and so forth. So go ahead and start it off, Tammy. Thanks.
Okay. Met agreeable to adjournment, the committee appointed for that purpose report of the draft of the report, which being read, the meeting proceeded to the consideration thereof, and after some time spent therein, adjourned till tomorrow morning.
Okay, so Sean, go ahead and read that first 5 paragraphs. So in other words, the last paragraph you're going to read is kind of that long one. And then Tammy will pick it up from there. Go ahead.
Thursday, September 14th, 1786. Met agreeable to adjournment. The meeting resumed the consideration of the draft of the report, and after some time spent therein and amendments made, the same was unanimously agreed to and is as follows, to wit. To the Honorable, the legislators of Virginia, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York, the commissioners from the said states respectively assembled at Annapolis, humbly beg leave to report that pursuant to their several appointments, they met at Annapolis in the state of Maryland on the 11th day of September instant, and having proceeded to a communication of their powers, they found that the states of New York, Pennsylvania, and Virginia had in substance, in nearly in the same terms, authorized their respective commissioners to meet such commissioners as were or might be appointed by the other states in the Union at such time and place as should be agreed upon by the said commissioners to take into consideration the trade and commerce of the United States, to consider how far an uniform system in their commercial intercourse and regulations might be necessary to their common interests and permanent harmony, and to report to the several states such an act relative to this great object as when unanimously ratified by them would enable the United States and Congress assembled effectually to provide for the same.
Okay, so when they all got there and they all read their credentials and what they were supposed to do, interestingly enough, they all had very similar empowerments, requirements to meet together with all of the states in the Union and start dealing with these real problems. What are we going to do? And so the obvious thing is that only 5 states showed up out of the 13, which is sorely inadequate. So, you know, they kind of stated the obvious that, okay, we tried to meet, and we all kind of realized, hey, wow, we can't do what you asked us to do. So now they go into this, you know, this, what are they going to do? And what do they need to do and so forth? So, Tammy, go ahead and read 4 paragraphs. That'll take you down to the next page where it starts with that the express terms of the powers. That right there is the final 4th paragraph for you, okay?
Okay.
All right.
That the state of Delaware had given similar powers to their commissioners, with this difference only, that the acts to be framed in virtue of those powers is required to be reported to the United States in Congress assembled, to be agreed to by them and confirmed by the legislature of legislatures of every state, that the state of New Jersey had enlarged the object of their appointment, empowering their commissioners to consider how far a uniform system in their commercial regulations, and other important matters might be necessary to the common interest and permanent harmony of several states, and to report such an act on the subject as when ratified by them would enable the United States and Congress assembled effectually to provide for the exigencies of the Union, that the appointment of commissioners have also been made by the states of New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and North Carolina, none of whom, however, have attended, but that no information has been received by your commissioners of any appointment having been made by the states of Connecticut, Maryland, South Carolina, or Georgia, that the express terms of the powers to your commissioners supposing a deputation from all states and having for object the trade and commerce of the United States, your commissioners did not conceive it advisable to proceed on the business of their mission under the circumstance of so partial and defective a representation.
So they're saying it, right? There it is right there that, hey, how can we do our job?
At least here.
Okay, so now, Sean, Go ahead and read the next three paragraphs.
Deeply impressed, however, is that where? Yeah.
Yeah.
Deeply impressed, however, with the magnitude and importance of the object confided to them on this occasion, your commissioners cannot forbear to indulge an expression of their earnest and unanimous wish that speedy measures may be taken to effect a general meeting of the states in a future convention for the same and such other purposes as the situation of public affairs may be found to require. If in expressing this wish or intimating any other sentiment, your commissioners should seem to exceed the strict bounds of their appointment, they entertain a full confidence that a conduct dictated by an anxiety for the welfare of the United States will not fail to receive an indulgent construction. In this persuasion, your commissioners submit an opinion that the idea of extending the powers of their deputies to other objects than those of commerce, which has been adopted by the state of New Jersey, was an improvement on the original plan and will deserve to be incorporated into that of a future convention. They are the more naturally led to this conclusion, as in the course of their reflections on the subject, they have been induced to think that the power of regulating trade is of such comprehensive extent and will enter so far into the general system of the federal government that to give it efficacy and to obviate questions and doubts concerning its precise nature and limits may require a correspondent adjustment of other parts of the federal system.
Okay, so they're now actually showing that, hey, you know, there was this great idea coming from New Jersey that they were going to focus on more than just what the rest of us were going to focus on. They were going to dive deeper into this extent of commerce. And, hey, commerce is huge. I mean, it is it is a huge part of the body of government, of our trade and our revenue, taxation, those types of things. And, you know, like the economy, right? It's the economy, stupid. But here they're basically saying that, hey, we don't just want to come back and be limited or have our hands tied. We're asking you to give the delegates to come back in the following year the authority to delve into these deeper, more comprehensive impacts regarding the federal government and our welfare as a union. Okay, so now, Tammy, there's one, two. Yeah, so go ahead and read the next two sentences or two paragraphs. The second one ends at the top of the next page. So go ahead and read those. Okay. Thanks.
That there are important defects in the system of the federal government is acknowledged by the acts of all those states which have concurred in the present meeting, that the defects upon a closer examination may be found greater and more numerous than even these acts imply, is at least so far probable from the embarrassments which characterize the present state of our national affairs, foreign and domestic, as may reasonably be supposed to merit a deliberate and candid discussion in some mode, which will unite the sentiments and counsels of all the states. In the choice of the mode, your commissioners are of opinion that a convention of deputies from the different states for the special and sole purpose of entering into this investigation and digesting a plan for supplying such defects as may be discovered to exist will be entitled to a preference from considerations which will occur without being particularized. Your commissioners decline an enumeration of those national circumstances on which their opinion respecting the propriety of a future convention with more enlarged powers is founded, as it would be an useless intrusion of facts and observations, okay, most of which have been frequently
Tammy?
The subject of published discussion. Yep.
We're going into break. So, yes. If you didn't hear it, I heard it. Oh, we're going into break. So, what we'll do is when we come back, we will basically have her pick up after. Actually, we'll just start off at the beginning of the second paragraph because there's that first line in that is really that important. But, folks, we will be back right after the short promo. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so we kind of tripped into the break. My fault again. So, one of the things, and I think, you know, I'll just take a quick pause before Tammy unmutes or what have you, because I think she's still muted. and she'll let me know when she's no longer muted. But one of the things that's obvious is they are looking for, you know, enabling the delegates in the future convention to be able to take care of everything possible. In other words, they want everything on the table. They're looking to make sure that they do this once and for all. Because the worst thing you can do, I don't know if you've ever done this, most people have probably done it, they start off with a concoction or a plan concocted in their head. You know, I'm going to create something and go do this. And let's say it's woodwork, and you don't have a good plan. And next thing you know, you start, and you only have so much work, so much wood to work with, that you end up damaging the wood and putting scars, distress, or what have you, to where by the time you're done, you know, your finished product has holes and, you know, because things just didn't go, especially if it's your first plan and you're a novice at it. Not that these men were novice, but you could tell from the Articles of Association granting Continental Congress really no authority to do anything other than petition. Why? Because the states didn't want this body Congress that represented everybody, not just them. Because what is the perfect representation in a Republican form of government? What is the perfect apportionment of representation? Tammy, I'll let you answer this. Do you know? It's okay. We kind of talked about this before, but if you don't remember, that's okay, because currently under the Constitution, apportionment is 1 for 30,000 people. In New
Hampshire. Oh, okay. That's what you're talking about. Yeah, right. So, I do remember that.
Okay, so in New Hampshire, they have much better representation, where it's one person to 1,700, something like that. What's the perfect representation?
One to one.
There we go. Yes, but that also equates to a democracy. So you want to reduce representation to a point, but not to that point, if that makes sense. So, okay.
Yeah.
We have these representatives.
One every 1,700, that's amazing.
That is amazing. That's in the state house. As a matter of fact, yeah, go do the math on it. You'll just go, wow. And they
have a building large enough to fit that many people? That's amazing.
Yeah, so it's 400 people in the house, and I think it's 200 some odd in the Senate. It's, 600 some odd.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think that they kind of do representations of precincts almost like. Anyway, so when we look at this perfect model of representation and sending adequate people, because when you do a convention and you're doing a convention for sovereign bodies, let's say you're going to do a convention of families in the community, you're going to create, you know, a community constitution. You're going to kind of create this community compact that is going to basically how everybody's going to agree to treat each other and so forth. So when you look at all of the different families, and you say two of the families have, you know, 30 people in, you know, in their families, and the rest of them only have two. Well, when you go into the convention, do the two families that have 30 people get more representation or more power in their vote? No, because the family itself is the sovereign unit. The states themselves are a sovereign unit. So the method of distribution of representation is by quorum or by delegation, by the body whole. In other words, the whole body of the delegates gets one vote. The delegation of the delegates from Delaware, if I can come up with another Della, then that'd be really great, but it's eluding me. But anyway, the delegation of the delegates from Delaware would get one vote in contrast to the larger delegation of the delegates from Virginia. They, too, get one vote. So when things are being submitted, that's why when we went through the Constitutional Convention, it was literally voted by state. New York voted no, Virginia voted yes, and that's how we saw everything shape out. The sovereigns all had one voice. So that way they had equal representation. That was the concept of the Senate, ensuring that each state had equal representation, equal suffrage, equal voice in the U.S. Senate. The concept of basically representing the population, in other words, something more towards a democracy, was for the people in the House. The powers and responsibilities that were delegated in the House were those things that were really important to the people, like, do we go to war and die? That was important. You know, the states don't send the state capitals or the county capitals don't send their buildings off to war. You know, they send their people, right? And if they're in office, they'll be immune. Only the people go to die. So they kind of divvied up the responsibilities in the U.S. Constitutional Convention to make sure that each representative body actually, you know, had the skin in that body of responsibility. So it would have been unfair to let the state governments determine whether they were going to go to war or not. The check on, you know, the powers were placed into the hands where the perceived true interest really lied, like taxation. You know, the taxation was going to be placed upon the people. That was always going to be the plan. And therefore, they wanted to make sure that, and that's why the Constitution mandated that any bill that was going to establish revenue must originate in the House of Representatives. So as you look at how they divvy things out, it was all basically representing, or I should say, supporting the concept of sovereignty and the uniquenesses of sovereignty. But back to this convention in Annapolis, they were clearly trying to make sure that the next run would be the final run. Let's put it all on the table and let's get this right in one shot. Because they knew they didn't have a lot of time. If they would have failed in 1787, then they would have had to try again in 88. And maybe even a better shot of failing again and again and again. Had they not succeeded, look, how long did it take for the federal government to even create a position? I mean, to get created. Well, from 1787, they had to wait till 1789 for the first session of the federal government. What happened in 1790? Well, the French Revolution. Guess what? Had the French Revolution happened a couple years earlier, and Napoleon Bonaparte came to power a few years earlier, and we hadn't paid our debt, do you think he would care whether we're just trying to figure out how to get our crap together and get in gears to start moving as a country? Do you think he would care? Or do you think he would say, you know what, I'm not going to worry about these nations in Europe. I'm going to worry about the nation that owes us millions of dollars that hasn't paid a penny. And so, I mean, so folks, I'm trying to give you the magnitude of the times. There were these looming problems that only the divine hand of providence knew what was going on. He knew it had to get done, right. And he knew, you know, what needed to be done to make these things happen, and it happened. And we're actually seeing how, you know, this impotent, inept paradigm was just running rampant through, you know, what was going on in the states and in the Union. It was almost like they were just oblivious. Most of the people were. This is why Madison started making these appeals. When he came back from this Annapolis convention, he started writing letters to George Washington. He started writing letters to other leaders that he knew and appealed to them to say, we need your support. I need you to commit to saying we've got to go out and do this convention. He didn't want necessarily Washington to go, but he wanted Washington to champion it. And guess what? Now, keep in mind, remember, we haven't even read anything regarding the Shays Rebellion. Anybody here, the Shays Rebellion mentioned in what you read? Sean, Tammy?
It says in a little internet clip that I found that it led to the Constitutional Convention because of the danger of insurrection and the country falling apart.
Okay, so...
So it says it played a part, and that, it was like the major...
Okay, fact. So here, these are the guys calling for the convention. Have you read anything in this document that says we're really concerned with this local problem up in Massachusetts?
No, of course not.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, what you're reading to me is propaganda that is trying to create a narrative out of something that was very minute and regional. It was one out of 13 states that had this problem. And even though they were so inept that they basically called upon Continental Congress to send troops up, and by the time they got there, the problem was solved, or the problem was kind of resolved somewhat. You know, the fact is that the Shays Rebellion was a pimple in comparison to the Articles of Confederation being inept and impotent. And everything we're reading here alludes to the real problem and the real reason why they had to have this convention. No mention. Yeah, go ahead.
That the states were kind of treating the Continental Congress like a substitute teacher or something. They were just ignoring them and, oh, we're not even going to show up.
Oh, you want to go there?
Pay you. Yeah, right.
They're just babysitters. Okay,
exactly.
So that's true. That is so true because you know why? Most of the big states, now see, that's generalizing because I do that too. Yeah. And I say this because the big states, because they get accurate, the little states were loving, you know, Continental Congress and protecting their sovereignty, but they were hating the fact that they weren't getting the protection because the big states weren't following it. The big states were making their own treaties to benefit themselves. When he talks about the states were, you know, bypassing and ignoring Continental Congress, that it was basically just a babysitter, that was occurring by the big states. The big states had the money, they had the trade, and Virginia was one of those, New York was another, Massachusetts was another, and Carolinas were two more. But the point is this, is that, you know, the Shays Rebellion, you know, if the Continental Congress was inept because the big states realized that they could do backdooring. It wasn't even backdooring. They were basically flaunting in front of the whole Union that they were creating their own trade agreements with France and everybody else. Most of these states, by the way, were paying their debt. The one state, Massachusetts, who do they want to do deals with? Do you know who they wanted to go do deals with? Now, just keep in mind that during the French Revolution, the nation really got split north to south. The North was Francophiles, and it was Massachusetts that wanted to do more business with Britain. And yet Britain was the one that was, you know, basically taking their ships, impressing their sailors, but they kept on wanting to do business with them. So, anyway, I mean, there's just, you know, this whole nation and their different interests and everything else only speaks to the schizophrenicness. That's not the proper word, but you know what I'm saying. They're just schizoid on, you know, how they were acting amongst each other. It was just, there was no common sense, logic, and reason. They weren't coming together, which really spoke to why these men, this is why we're reading this document today, because I knew this didn't point to the Shays Rebellion. It literally put all the focus on the failings of the Articles of Confederation. And so when we get into the Assumption Act, you're going to realize that the northern states, i.e. Massachusetts, was one of those states that said, we want to leave the Union because, you know, we still can't pay our debt. And so it was Hamilton that used Massachusetts. This is where the corruption started, from these states that couldn't pay their debt, where Hamilton created these backroom deals with these guys, say, I'm going to take care of this, and you're going to vote this way, we're going to do these things. And that's how Hamilton started moving Continental Congress, or I should say now the U.S. Congress, going down the wrong roads of creating the bank and implied powers and so forth and so on. So anyway, Tammy, you were just starting off the last paragraph on that page, so go ahead and finish this part that you were reading. Thank you.
Okay. Your commissioners decline an enumeration of those national circumstances on which their opinion respecting the propriety of future convention with more enlarged powers is founded, as it would be a useless intrusion of facts and observations, most of which have been frequently the subject of public discussion and none of which can have escaped the penetration of those to whom they would in this instance be addressed. They are, however, of a nature so serious as in the view of your commissioners to render the situation of the United States delicate and critical, calling for an exertion of united virtue and wisdom of all the members of the Confederacy.
Okay, so they're actually saying that this problem with the Articles of Confederation, and they weren't talking about insurgencies, right? So if a state had an insurgency, whose problem was that? Even under the Constitution, whose problem was a insurgency within a state?
Legislature.
Well, the problem is actually the state itself. So in other words, if in Massachusetts under the Union, the Shays Rebellion would have occurred, the federal government does not have the authority to just grant. The paradigm today is that they do. But the federal government cannot just call forth a militia to basically suppress an insurrection. It requires the call from the governor, if not the state legislature, if the governors are actually, it requires the state legislature, and if they're not in session, then the governor has the authority to call for assistance to suppress the insurrection. That's the process. Not that the federal government sits there on the ledge of a skyscraper waiting for the bat signal to be shined up into the sky. So, show my age a little bit, but anyway. Anywho. So, right, wrong, or indifferent, the Constitution actually has what the processes are. And yeah, they're to call forth the militia to suppress insurrections. The concept would be that the insurrection would be so great of magnitude that it would require, because it would be occurring in multiple states. We actually saw that in 2020. And yet Trump didn't get Congress, and Congress refused because they were Democratic, because of partisanship. And so this is why I go on and on about using Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Had Trump started using that in his first term, and started removing people and waking people up to say, you can't do these things, Congress. You have a job to do. Your job is to basically fulfill your oath and make sure that everything you're doing is in support of the Constitution. In other words, suppressing insurrections, repelling the invasions, instead of actually contributing and calling for people to go out and protest and conduct an insurrection. They were the cheerleaders. They were equally the cheerleaders of, come on, run across our border. We will get you in here. Don't worry about it. They've been the culprits all along. Anyway, go ahead and read these last two paragraphs for this day. Thank you, Sean.
Under this impression, your commissioners, with the most respectful deference, beg leave to suggest their unanimous conviction that it may essentially tend to advance the interests of the Union if the states by whom they have been respectively delegated would themselves concur and use their endeavors to procure the concurrence of the other states in the appointment of commissioners to meet at Philadelphia on the second Monday in May next, to take into consideration the situation of the United States, to devise such further provisions as shall appear to them necessary to render the Constitution of the federal government adequate to the exigencies of the Union, and to report such an act for that purpose to the United States and Congress assembled, as when agreed to by them and afterwards confirmed by the legislatures of every state, will effectually provide for the same. Though your commissioners could not with propriety address these observations and sentiments to any but the states they had the honor to represent, they have nevertheless concluded from motives of respect to transmit copies of this report to United States in Congress assembled and to the executives of the other states by order of the commissioners.
Okay, great. You see, by the order of the... So these guys were carrying weight. They had commissions. They were representing sovereign states, kind of like ambassadors. Okay, so we won't read the rest of it because that's pretty much the meat of this. But what I'd like to do is go ahead, if you want to, you can keep that open while we open up the report of proceedings in Congress, because Congress actually has a meeting of the delegates in the Continental Congress. They kind of list the names here, and so we don't necessarily need to read the very first part because it's kind of shorthanded and everything, and this is kind of done in shorthand. But bottom line, this is the meeting, and what we really want to do is we want to read there's two paragraphs that are highlighted, but let's read all three of those. And then at the very bottom, there are a few more paragraphs. So there's three more down there. So Sean, you go ahead, or actually Sean, you just read. So Tammy, you go ahead and read these top three paragraphs. The, you know, Congress having under the, that highlighted, not highlighted, and then the highlighted one. And then they have a vote. And then, Sean, you go ahead and read the last three paragraphs. Because bottom line, this is where Continental Congress takes this report and they respond in kind. Now, what is the date of this? This is February 21st, 1787. In other words, from the end of September up until February, Congress has basically been trying to figure out what to do and, you know, and put a spin on getting this support, because if they have this convention and they fix the problems, then everybody benefits. So Congress needed to put, and they promulgated this report or their proceedings regarding the upcoming convention. So again, Tammy, let's go ahead and read these first three. Go ahead.
Congress, having had under consideration the letter of John Dickinson, Esquire, chairman of the commissioners who assembled at Annapolis during the last year, also the proceedings of the said commissioners, and entirely coinciding with them as to the inefficiency of the federal government and the necessity of devising such farther provisions as shall render the same adequate to the exigencies of the Union, do strongly recommend to the different legislatures to send forward delegates to meet the proposed convention on the second Monday in May next at the city of Philadelphia. The delegate for the state of New York thereupon laid before Congress instructions which they had received from their constituents, and in pursuance of the said instructions, moved to postpone the farther consideration of the report in order to take up the following propositions, to wit, that it be recommended to the state composing the union that a convention of representatives from the said states respectively be held at, on, for the purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation and perpetual union between the United States of America and reporting to the United States in Congress assembled under the states respectively such alterations and amendments of the said Articles of Confederation as the representatives met in such convention shall judge proper and necessary to render them adequate to the preservation and support of the union.
Okay, so the reason we're doing this is because you're going to notice that the language from Annapolis is very similar to the language here, and in the next document, it'll be very similar as well. So go ahead, Sean, and read the next three paragraphs, and we've got 2 minutes, so let's kind of keep an eye on that, too. If we need to, we'll stop. Go ahead, though.
A motion was then made by the delegates from Massachusetts to postpone the farther consideration of the report in order to take into consideration a motion which they read in their place. This being agreed to, the motion of the delegates from Massachusetts as taken up and being amended was agreed to as follows. Whereas there is provision in the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union for making alteration therein, by the assent of a Congress of the United States and of the legislatures of the several states, and whereas experience hath evidenced that there are defects in the present Confederation, as a means to remedy which several of the states, and particularly the state of New York, by express instructions to their delegates in Congress, have suggested a convention for the purposes expressed in the following resolution, and such convention appearing to be the most probable means of establishing in these states a firm national government. Resolved that in the opinion of Congress it is expedient that on the second Monday in May next, a convention of delegates who shall have been appointed by the several states be held at Philadelphia for the sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation and reporting to Congress and the several legislatures such alterations and provisions therein as shall, when agreed to in Congress and confirmed by the states, render the federal constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the union.
Okay, so from there, they've created this language of rendering this the Articles of Confederation of the Constitution adequate for the exigencies of the union. And so we're literally out of time. And what we'll do, unfortunately, I don't think we'll have Tammy back tomorrow or in the next session. But we'll, you know, Tammy, if you want to, you know, bring anything up, we can bring it back up when you come back again. But what we want to do moving forward is kind of set the stage as to how this proceeded and the language that they used in the proceeding forward. Because what we're doing, and the reason this is so important, is we need to really scrutinize what was the commission of these delegates going into the Constitutional Convention. Because there are those that say they were a runaway convention, they exceeded their commission, and I will prove otherwise. I'm G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
My show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.